This parsha that we're about to read this Shabbos, Parsha Shlach, is one of the most difficult and perplexing parshios, because it opens up with a list of those who are going to be sent out on this mission to scout the land, and the Torah itself adds a postscript to this whole list of names. Kulam, all of them. Anoshim Roshei Bnei Yisrael Hem. They are the heads of the leaders of the Jewish nation. How is it possible that they would have fallen so hard and so fast from the high level of being the Rosh Bnei Yisrael to do the sin that's going to wreak havoc not only for that generation but perhaps for all of history? To speak Sarah means negative words about the land of Israel. So in this essay, what we're going to try to understand is the Meraglim in a certain perspective. From a certain perspective. Do we need one more copy or we're okay? Oh, here's one more copy? Fine. If anybody comes in, sometimes Murray comes in a little later, we have one more copy. Now, the parsha of the Meraglim is perplexing for another reason, entirely different reason, and that's the punishment that's meted out as a result of this sin of the Meraglim. We know that the Meraglim traveled in the land for 40 days. And as a result of those 40 days, the punishment was that the Jewish people in the Midbar would travel for the Midbar for how many years?
38.
Okay, and the pasuk says 40. Let's read the pasuk. Bamidbar hazeh,
2 plus 38.
Yiplu pigrechem v'chol pkudechem l'chol misparchem miben esrim shonu v'mal asher halilosem alai v'tapchem asher amartem l'voz yir. Again, I'm not going to translate every word here, but it says u'bneichem yu roim bamidbar, that your children of Israel will be like shepherds, you know, traveling through the wilderness, arboim shana, for 40 years. B'mispar hayamim, this is a pasuk in Chumash, my friends. This is not some sort of a drosha, a homiletical interpretation. It says in the pasuk, B'mispar hayamim asher terachem, asher tartem es haaretz, because of the amount of days that you scouted out the land, arboim yom, the Torah says yom l'shana, yom l'shana, corresponding to every single day that you scouted the land, your children will sojourn through the wilderness for an entire year. So 40 days times 40 years equals, if each day is a year, so 40 days means 40 years. So all the commentaries ask the obvious question, the Kli Yoker and others, why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu punish the people of Israel that they would have to trek through the wilderness for 40 years? 1 year corresponding to one day, that's not a fair punishment. They could have traveled through the Midbar for 40 days, that would have been a day for a day. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, "Call me Dosef Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mida Keneged Mida." The way God meets out punishment is measure for measure. So if there was one day of sin, then there should be one day of punishment. But why a full year that corresponds to one day? I'm wondering if there's any chance, again, if you're comfortable with this, of closing the doors, because I just find it difficult to concentrate if the doors are open and there's noise outside. But again, it's up to you, whatever you feel comfortable. So once again, where's the midah kineged midah in the punishment of a year corresponding to a day? So these are our two basic questions. Let's review. The first question is, Roshei Bnei Yisrael Hema, these are the leaders of Israel, and then they fall really fast, and they're guilty of perhaps one of the most hideous, repulsive crimes in all of Jewish history. They speak against the land of Israel, they discourage the people from their great mission of traveling to the land and conquering the land. Number two, how is their Midah Keneged Midah if the punishment is going to be a full year corresponding to one day? Now, it could be, again, this is a little bit of a chutzpah to say this, that the the Kli Yakar and others were unaware of a Gemara, meaning the Gemara itself addresses this question. Maybe not head on and explicitly, but certainly by implication. And this is the Gemara in Masechet Chagiga on Daf Hey, and the Gemara tells a story about a certain individual whose name was Idi, Rav Idi. Rav Idi lived very far away from the closest Beis Medrash. The traveling time to get to the closest Beis Medrash to be part of the yeshiva learning was 3 months' travel. That meant that in order to get there, he would take 3 months. To get back home, it would take another 3 months. And it's a six-month investment. How much time did he actually spend in the Beis Medrash? 1 day. So twice a year, he would spend 1 day in the Beis Medrash. The rest of the year, he was busy traveling back and forth. Again, how he made money, I don't know. Maybe he's a rich guy, independently wealthy, I don't know. But in any event, he was always on the road, except for 2 days. And the students in the yeshiva called him Bar Bei Rav Dechad Yom. He's the student who comes in for a day. Now, Rav Idi felt a little slighted by that title that they gave him. And he thought that basically they were laughing about in the Beis Medrash. You know, this guy is a yeshiva student for 1 day. You know, like, give it a break. You know, how much can you learn in a day? So when Rabbi Yochanan, who was the head of the yeshiva, got wind of this, that they called Rav Idi by this kinui, by this nickname, that he's the Talmud of 1 day, he calls in Rav Idi and he begs him not to do anything that would seem pejorative, that would seem to be negative about the Talmidim and yeshiva. Meaning, Rabbi Yochanan was really frozen with fear. He felt that if Rav Idi was slighted, then he could, again, I'm going to translate the Gemara literally, he could punish the entire community. What he means by punish, I mean, Rav Idi was not a, you know, not a man to sling, you know, with a sling and arrow, you know, to try to kill people. But he meant that if he would cry out to the Ribbono Shel Olam out of his sense of being broken, because he really believes that the children in the yeshiva were making fun of him, God would see his tears and he would hold the yeshiva responsible, and terrible things could happen.
Well, sir, quick question. But the thing is, if he had that type of merit, why is he only learning once a year?
Well, again, he maybe you could ask why he didn't pack his bags and move closer to the yeshiva. But given the fact that he that's where he lived, he lived three months' journey from this yeshiva, this Rabbi Yochanan's yeshiva.
Okay.
So he would take 3 months to get there. He would spend a day in the yeshiva, 3 months to get back.
Right.
And then, after he spent a little time with his family, again a second round.
Okay.
So basically, he was only able to chaparain, as we'd say, 1 day of learning. So the yeshiva guys called him, oh, he's a yeshiva student 1 day out of the year. Could you imagine if you learned at yeshiva, and it was a student who was enrolled in the yeshiva, and he showed up for 1 day? So that sounds a little bit weird, does it not? So you know, and you're talking about children now, so they start joking around, you know, oh, he shows up for 1 day in the year. Rav Yochanan got very worried about this, because Rav Idi, in Rav Yochanan's eyes, Rav Yochanan held Rav Idi in great esteem, and he felt that if Rav Idi would be insulted and hurt by this nickname that was given to him by the yeshiva students, God would somehow, you know, bring punishment upon the entire yeshiva. So what does he do? He calls in Rav Idi and he begs him. This is the language of Rabbi Yochanan. He says, "B'matusa minoch, I beg you, lo tanish lehu l'rabbanon. Don't punish the rabbis." And Rashi explains what it means is that don't be broken by it. And what does Rabbi Yochanan do? That's not enough for him. Nafik Rabbi Yochanan lebei midrasha. Rabbi Yochanan enters into the study house. Vidarash. Darash means he interprets a verse in the Torah. In this case, in Tanakh, in Yeshayahu HaNavi. Yeshayahu HaNavi says, in the name of God, V'osi yom yom yidrashu. Come to search me or seek me out 1 day and 1 day. Vidas drachai yechavtzun, and you will know my ways, and that will be Yechavtu means I will be very chafetz, I'll be very positive towards it. And Rabbi Yochanan asks the following question. He says, why does God say Yom Yom? Elolom alecha, this is coming to teach you. Kol haosek, you may want to underline this. I mean, it's a mind-boggling statement. I mean, it could really change your attitude towards life. And this is Rabbi Yochanan speaking. Kol haosek b'Torah afilu yom echad b'shana. Anyone who's genuinely and motivated and dedicates one day in the year to Torah, malal of hakosuv, the pasuk considers it keilu osak b'Torah kol hashana kula. One day equals 1 year. Rabbi Yochanan doesn't stop here. He says v'chein, you have to know the flip side of it, the downside, the midas haperonios, when it comes to meeting out punishment. Dichsiv, let's see if this pasuk sounds familiar to you. You'll tell me when we're going to read this pasuk in the Torah. B'mispar ha'yamim asher tartem es ha'aretz, just like the number of days that you scattered out the land, which parasha is that in?
Shlach.
We're going to read it this Shabbos. V'chi arboim shona chotu, did they sin for 40 years? V'alo arboim yom chotu, they were guilty of 40 days. So why are we punished 40 years? Elolomer Chodesh teaches you the flip side of what we said before, namely kol over avera fil yom echad b'shana. He violates the Torah one day out of the year. Ma'ilal of hakosu, the pasuk considers it kilu avar kol hashana kul. This, my friends, is what's called in simple English quality and not quantity. What energy do you put into something? You can, you know, do actions that, you know, one percentage of, you know, how do they say it? An automobile works on how many cylinders? I guess there are different kinds of automobiles.
Four cylinder cars.
Four, is it six or eight, you know,
yeah,
something?
Yeah.
So let's say, imagine an eight cylinder car. We work in our life, they say, on one or possibly two cylinders. You know, yeah, we learn a little bit. You know, my brain is on 50 million things. I'm thinking about, you know, how I'm going to eat my next meal, and when am I going to travel on my next, you know, when am I going to buy my tickets, and is my passport updated? You know, a million thoughts cross our mind. What percentage of our very energy, our being, do we put into the learning of Torah? Tefillah, for example. Even Rabbi Akiva said about himself that he thanked his head for bowing at the right point in tefillah, because if not for my head doing so, I would have missed it. That's Rabbi Akiva, the greatest Jew probably of all time, except for maybe Moshe Rabbeinu, but that's about it. What percentage of us are really jumping into the mitzvah? But if you could imagine that your entire being is inputted into this one day, you know, you're 24, you know, for 24 hours nonstop, you know, you give it your all, that's worth a full year. But the flip side of it is you can have someone who put all his energy into an avera, and he identified with that sin to such an extent that it's his whole being. As a result, one day of sin is worth a full year. So we begin to understand the difference between quantity and quality. We have a tendency of measuring things in quantitative terms. 24 hours is just one day. It's not 365 days. But there's something called echus in Hebrew. This is a great word in modern Hebrew, echus, which means quality. And everything depends upon the echus. It doesn't matter how many days of learning you're putting into it. It could be one single day. But if you put all your energy, you know, your full eight cylinders into it, like Rav Indi, who worked so hard for 3 months to get there and 3 months to get back home, obviously, he cherished that one day, and he exploited it to its maximum in order to study Torah with the Chachmei HaTorah in the Yeshiva Rav Yochanan. Such an Esek HaTorah, such a dedication, even if it's only one day in quantity, in quality, it's worth a full year. And the opposite is true in the case, Chas V'Shalom, of an Avera, if a person is giving his whole head, his body, his energies, his heart, his cravings, everything he puts into that one Avera, it might have taken him only one day to implement that Avera, but it's worth a full year. So what we derive from Rabbi Yochanan is an answer to the question of many later commentaries as to why God punished Klal Yisrael for the Chet HaMeraglim 40 years, corresponding to 40 days, and that's what the Pasuk says. But the answer is that just like an Osek Batorah in the Midah Tov, in the positive side, is one day is considered like a full year, so too in the flip side, for punishment in the negative Avera side, if a person violates even one day, it's going to be punished for a full year if he puts all his heart and soul into that Avera. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan proves his point dafka from the negative side. He says to the Talmidim, if you don't believe me that one day of learning Torah is like a full year of learning Torah, then I'll prove it to you from the negative side of an Avera, from the fact that the Meraglim were dedicated to their rebellious act in which they denied their faith in God, who had promised them Eretz Zavas Chol V'Dvash. God had promised them that He would bring them into the land. It was a great land. It was a wonderful land. He would protect them and they would defeat their enemies. They questioned that belief and that faith in God. That was every single day of their rebellion against God was worth a full year, and that's what Rabbi Yochanan wants to prove. If you're following the text, you can turn to page 2. Chagiga Daf He. We do have this in a printed form, but I don't know if we had enough copies. Reuven, I apologize. But
I have one.
Oh, so if you have one, do me a favor. On page 1, on the bottom right, there are three columns. On the bottom right, you'll see two lines up from the bottom. It'll say Chagiga Hayamid Beis. So please underline that because, you know, whenever you see that, your eye, when you underline something, you know, your eye catches it and you get all the, you know, all the sources. Okay. Now, on the second page, we're going to study a few words from Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai in the Zohar. Now, the Zohar, as you know, is written in Aramaic, so we're going to skip the Aramaic. We're going to go straight to the Hebrew.
Who translated it? Who wrote the Aramaic Hebrew?
It's the Shvilei Pinchas. His name is Rabbi Pinchas Friedman. And he translates the Zohar whenever he quotes it. There are translations on the Zohar that you can get.
Oh, but there's no one officially credited with...
I'm not sure. I think each translation has its own milus, you know, its own positive thing. But his is just a literal translation, simply word for word. And you'll see this on page 2, line 4. Amru, im yikansu Yisrael aretz, if the people of Israel will enter into the land. Now, who's the Amru here? Again, there are many different explanations as to why the Meraglim did what they did. After all, they were leaders of Israel. Why did they, when they scouted, they had a negative report about Israel. Why did they do so? Many, many different answers. The Zohar has its particular answer. I don't want you to walk out of here thinking that that's the only answer. Shivim Panim LaTorah, the 70 ways of interpreting it. But one way is the way of the Rashbi in the Zohar. And he says that they were worried about the following. Once we enter into the land, there's going to be a change of, what's it called? Change of guard? Is there such a phrase in English? And what it means is
that... The changing of the guard.
Changing of the guard.
At
Buckingham. It means they're going to be replaced by a younger generation. Yimne Moshe Nesim Acherim. Other princes will replace them. And you and I know that anyone who's been in politics and has a position of power, he doesn't want to give it up so fast. It's very difficult. We were appointed Nesiim for the 40 years in the desert of Ba'aretz. Once we entered the land, it's going to be a new, like we said, a changing the guard. It's going to be a whole new cadre of leaders. We're going to lose our positions. Now, if this be the case, there's a very powerful Yetzirah, you know, a very powerful inclination here to undermine the enterprise of entering into the land. And Yoshua is one of these leaders. So Moshe Rabbeinu, as you recall, changes the name from Hoshea to Yoshua. He adds a letter Yud. Rashi says, Ispalel Olav. Moshe Rabbeinu raised a prayer to God. Yud came, the name of God. Yoshiach HaMeatzas Meraglim. He should protect you against their evil counsel because it's a very powerful influence. Do we have one more copy? I don't know. Okay.
Thanks.
Okay. Now, let's ask the following question.
It's probably a continuation.
Right? Given the powerful influence, the way the Zohar explains it, of the temptation that ultimately led the scouts to do the Avera that they did, if they would have overcome that temptation, that's called in Hebrew la'amod b'nisayon, if they were in a challenging position, and this was a difficult challenge according to the Zohar, then their attitude towards the enterprise of scouting the land would be a whole different attitude. They would have put all their energy into looking for the good in the land, into bringing back a report that, you know what, this is a cinch. We'll be able to enter into the land and conquer the land. God is with us, which is exactly what Kalev and Yehoshua are going to say. But they would have all, in unison, would have brought back this positive report if only they had overcome that powerful influence on them that dragged them down. Had they succeeded, then Rav Edi would, the principle that Rav Yochanan established with regard to Rav Edi would have come to the fore, that if a person genuinely studies Torah even for one day, the Torah considers if he studied for a year, and then it would be considered as if they, the Meraglim, had fulfilled their mission for 40 years, as if they were involved in, again, in a positive sense, in being Mekayim their mission for 40 years, because again, each day would have been equal to a year. And then there would have been a tremendous Kiddush Hashem, and there would be no need for the people of Israel to go and trek through the wilderness of 40 years, because it would have been considered as if they already did the 40 years, because 40 days would be considered 40 years. However, because they buckled and they did not overcome and withstand the temptation of this great challenge, and Rashi says that immediately when they went out to scout the land, they already had in mind, maybe not consciously but subconsciously, a Lashon Hara, a negative report. Do you remember this, Rashi? This you'll see in the fourth paragraph on the right column, page 2. Vayelchu vayavo, the pasuk says they went and they came back. Lahakish behalichosan lebiyosam. There's an analogy, an equation here between the way they went out and the way they came back. Ma biyosam beitzara, just like when they returned, they had negative things to report. Af halichosan beitzara, they had a negative feeling about the land, because they were already buckling under, and they were already subjugated, so to speak, to this powerful influence that it would not be in their interest, in their vested interest, for the people of Israel to go into the land. So therefore, even on the first day that they scouted, they were already on the left foot, and therefore even that first day would be counted like a year, and hence 40 days equals 40 years. By the way, he has a footnote here. In the next paragraph, the Sifsei Cohen, one of the great Kabbalists of about two centuries ago, he writes in Parshas Achrimos that God gives us one day of Yom Kippur in which we are sanctified and elevated to the level of angels. We don't eat, we don't drink, but we dedicate ourselves to doing tshuva and to rectifying all our evils. And he says that that's like Rav Edi. And that's going to be on Yom Kippur. If we exploit the day to its maximum and we dedicate the entire day to sanctity and to tshuva, then that's considered like a whole year of sanctity and tshuva. Because one day, if you put all your eggs into, all your feeling into, all your energies into, it's like one whole year. I wanted to point out that footnote for you, because I know for myself that makes Yom Kippur a whole different meaning, a whole different significance. Okay. Now, at this point, we're ready. Just one second, I just want to make sure we're ready. Let's give me a second here. Oh. We're ready now for what I call Hakafa Bet. And you may remember from past weeks that whenever we study the Shvilei Pinchas, he starts with a set of questions, and then he leaves them, and then he comes back at the end. So this is a typical example. What we want to study now, in the middle column on page 2, is the Medrash Tanchuma. The Medrash Tanchuma. Roz, would it be okay if we close the door? If you don't mind. And again, there are many people in the room, so I don't think...
Windows are open.
Yeah, but I don't hear anything from the windows. I'm hearing them from the base mattress, so it's very hard for me to concentrate. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Okay? So what's in the Medrash Tanchuma? Oh, no. She left because of that reason?
I think she closed the door.
No, that's just what closed the door is.
Oh, okay, good. I got scared. I thought you were leaving.
The other door.
Okay, fine. So now we're going to study the Tanchuma. The Tanchuma says the following. Again, we could read it inside if we get a chance, but I'm more interested in the principle, in the concept. The Tanchuma has an entirely new answer to the question, why did the people of Israel have to trek through the wilderness for 40 years? A whole new answer to that question. And the answer is that if they would have gone from Mitzrayim straight into the land of Israel, they would have missed a glorious opportunity of 40 years of study of Torah. Let's explain. Had the Jews entered immediately into the land, they would have had to dedicate themselves day and night to agriculture. They would not have time to dedicate themselves to Torah. And now they're leaving Mitzrayim, let's say their spiritual level is not the highest, they need a certain very strong shot in the arm, you know, some sort of very, very, very powerful immunization. They have to get Torah and spirituality deep into their soul, so that then when they would enter into the land of Israel, they would be able to adjust to a different kind of way of life without losing their connection to that spiritual high that they would achieve during a period of how many years? 40 years. Are you with me, Rabosai? Please don't miss me on this. If you catch me on this, you'll understand what we're talking about tonight. The Tanchuma's approach is that the Jews had to go for 40 years into the Midbar. What would they be doing in the Midbar? Well, they'd be eating man, they'd be drinking from the Mei Be'er, and in the phrase of the Tanchuma, because they're dedicating themselves to Torah, they don't have to dig ditches and sow and plow and harvest and so forth and so on. HaTorah misyasheves begufan. Torah somehow penetrates deep into their bodies, deep into their psyches. Now, on one level, I can understand the Tanchuma. These were great miracles. They're drinking from Mei Be'er. They're eating from Lechem Min HaShamayim that's coming down from the heavens. They can dedicate themselves exclusively to the study of Torah and to spirituality. And it makes sense that that would fortify them in a spiritual way, that now they can enter into the land. And even though in the land they would be busy day and night in farming without dedicating time to Torah study, but they wouldn't lose it because they were already B'nai Torah, so to speak. The Torah has already transformed their essence, their personality during the 40 years in the Midbar. And we can expand upon this Tanchuma based on the Ktzos HaChoshen, one of the great scholars of 150, 200 years ago, in his introduction. And he writes the following. He quotes this Medrash, and he says the following, that the man that they ate in the Midbar would be a spiritual sustenance, v'hu hechrechi l'kabolas haTorah, so that now they could be ready for the Torah. In other words, the man had a tremendously uplifting spiritual impact on their personalities. And he goes on to say that the man is called Lechem Abirim. It's the food of angels. I guess we'd have to call it angel food. And Moshe Rabbeinu himself would be sustained by this kind of a food when he goes up to the mountain for 40 days. And the people of Israel would be sustained by this food for 40 years in the desert. And they would be uplifted in a spiritual sense by eating the man. So again, it's not just that they're studying Torah because they have the man. They don't have to go to work. But on top of it, they're getting a daily injection of spirituality through this Lechem Abirim, through this very spiritual entity which is called man. But not only that, now we go to page 3, the Arizal says even more than this, that the water that they drank, where they get the water from, everybody? Be'er Shel Miriam. Even that had a spiritually uplifting impact on their souls. And the reason is because the Be'er Shel Miriam was some sort of metaphysical or supernatural entity of water. There was no water in the desert in nature. How could they survive 40 years? So in the Zchus of Miriam, they had the Be'er Shel Miriam. So what's going on here? For 40 years, they're dedicating themselves to Torah study. They're eating the man. They're being uplifted by the man. They're being uplifted by the Be'er Shel Miriam. Does anybody know who is the most outstanding disciple of the Arizal?
Chaim Vital.
Excellent, Reb Chaim Vital. Reb Chaim Vital was walking with his Rebbe, and he records the following story. Again, this is Reb Chaim Vital talking to us in his biography about a walk he took with his Rebbe, the Ari. So if you want to doubt it, that's up to you. I don't know. It's hard to believe this story, but this is a story he tells. And he says the following. They were walking towards towards the Kinneret, and when they got to the water, at that particular point in the conversation, Reb Chaim Vital turned to his Rebbe and he says, you know, I've learned so much from you, but I can't seem to retain it. I'm constantly forgetting what I learned. So he sort of, you know, poured out his soul to his Rebbe, to the Ari. So the Ari turns to him, and they were apparently at that point already, you know, on a little bit of a raft or something, some Svina Ktana, over the water of the Tveria, near Tveria. And the Arizal takes out a kli, he takes out a vessel, a receptacle of some sort, he fills it up with water, and he gives it to Reb Chaim, and he says, I want you to drink this water, because this water is from the Be'er Shel Miriam, and this water will guarantee that you won't forget your knowledge. Again, it's up to you. You know, you're the audience. You decide what you want to do with this story. But the bottom line of the story is that the Jews for 40 years in the Midbar were drinking Be'er Shel Miriam water. And that had a spiritual impact. So the 40 years in the desert...
So he drank the water.
And he drank the water. And it says that Mishav V'elech Hischil Lichnos Chachma, he gathered his Chachma together and he didn't lose it. So hence we have all the Torah of Reb Chaim Vital. And again, it's unbelievable how much Torah we have from Reb Chaim Vital, and all in the name of his Rebbe, the Ari. Which itself is magical, because according to the historians, I mean, there's machlokas at what age the Ari died. He was either 33 or 38. And the amount of Torah we have from the Ari is just endless. So the whole thing doesn't make any sense. I don't know. You'd have to read, you know, Ripley's Believe It or Not in order to understand the history of the Arizal. It's just beyond human comprehension.
Yeah, and why didn't Chaim Vital pinpoint that spot where they got the word from so we could benefit?
Maybe he did, but somehow it got lost over tradition. In any event, what we get from this entire story is the following conclusion, that it was part of the divine plan from the get-go that the Jewish people, in order to enter into the land on a spiritual high and be ready for its challenges, would have to be in the Midbar for 40 years, dedicating themselves to Achilas Man, it's hard to refine or purify the soul of the Jew from the, you know, from the long golus of Mitzrayim, and to drink the Be'erah Shel Miriam, and to study Torah, and this would all bring them from one level to the other until they're ready to enter into the land and face its challenges. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, im ani molichan, if I take them straight through, machzikim ish besodeh ubekerem, they go straight from Mitzrayim into the land. Each person has his field, his orchard, his vineyard, umevatlim in a Torah. Ela, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is in the middle of the column, the middle column in page 3, ani molichon derech hamidbar, v'yochlu es haman, v'yishtu me be'er, v'atorah misyashev es begufa, the tanchum that we started with. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu had this idea, and this seems to be built into the very structure of things, that they would go through the midbar for 40 years in order to sanctify themselves with man and bear. Then they're ready for Eretz Yisrael. So I don't get it. How could this be so when the Torah itself testifies that the reason why they went into the midbar for 40 years is because of what? The sin of the Meraglim. 40 years connected 40 days.
But there were 40 days that Moshe was on Har Sinai.
And therefore?
So you could say 40 years for those 40 days.
And therefore, but I don't understand how that answers the question. Again, we're saying the following. According to the Medrash, we had to go into the Midbar for 40 years. That was part of the divine plan, right? Now we're saying that according to the verse in Chumash, it says we went in for 40 years because of the Chedah Meraglim. I don't know how you can reconcile that.
Well, one is Chumash and one is Medrash. I mean, Chumash.
No, but we want to understand the Medrash. The Medrash can't, you know, you can't tell me that a Medrash Tanchuma is just laughing at the Chumash. You know what I'm saying? You and I could say we don't understand this Medrash because we buy the Pasuk. But, you know, you want to reconcile a Medrash is Tanoim. You know, it's not Amoroim. You want to reconcile that with a Pasuk. You know, it's not like we invented this Pasuk. I mean, it's right there. We read it before. We didn't know you were coming later, so we read it before you got here. You don't mind, do you?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just joking.
It's not a contradiction. It's just because since Hashem loves us so much, how can He punish us? But it's not just a punishment. It's also a learning experience.
Okay, I think you're on the right track.
It could be that the Medrash is saying that we were destined, let's say, to spend 40 years, but the specific incident which caused us to be there 40 years might not have been the Meraglim. It could have been, there would have been something else. That at some point we would have messed up in some way that would have caused would have caused 40 years.
But I guess
he didn't talk about the Meraglim.
The only problem is the premise of his question, which again you might want to question, but his premise is that even if we wouldn't have sinned, even in the total absence of sin, we needed to go into the Midbar. The divine being understood that Klal Yisrael couldn't have survived in Eretz Yisrael without that buffer zone of the 40 years. So why does the Torah say that it was a punishment?
But he had confidence that sooner or later we would sin.
No, but I'm just asking, Murray. No, here's the question. What would have happened? This is the theoretical question. If there wouldn't have been a sin, would we have gone to the Midbar? In other words, what at the end of the day caused us to go through the Midbar? It's either A or B.
I think if we would have been on the level where we wouldn't have been sinning, then we would not have needed those 40 years.
Oh, okay, good. So I think that's more or less what Larry was saying. Larry was saying.
In other words, either we would have been 40 years, in which case we're guaranteed to sin and cause it to happen, or we didn't need the 40 years, in which case we're at such a high level we can just go straight in. So
let's look at the, you know, everything you're saying is very good. I just want to see the super commentary on the Medrash called the Yafei Tor. And the Yafei Tor tries to explain this Medrash based on another Tanchuma. You know, sometimes if you have one difficult Tanchuma, you can answer with another difficult Tanchuma. So there's another difficult Tanchuma, which you'll see on the bottom of the middle column on page 3. It says the following. The Yosef Hurad Mitzrayma. Right, so the brothers sold Yosef. And the Medrash comments, Zehu Sha'omar HaKosuv, there's a Pasuk in Tehillim.
between your legs.
Lechu chazu mifalos elokim nora alila al bnei adam. Now, if you like to underline things for emphasis, you want to underline two words here in the Medrash, and that's Nora Alila. Do you see that? Two lines and three lines up from the bottom. Nora Alila. And we're going to try to figure out what that means. Now, the question here is whether or not Yosef had to be sold to Mitzrayim in order for the Jews to go down to Mitzrayim. Meaning, is it part of a divine plan that the Jewish people should be exiled into Mitzrayim, or is it simply a result of the whole, you know, Chagadya, the whole sin of selling Yosef? So the Medrash coins a phrase here based on a pasuk in Tehillim called Nora Alila. And we're going to try to figure out what that means. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. So funny, because I gave a whole shia this morning here in this room in Masechta Sanhedrin on Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha's view of pshara, of making a compromise. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. Af hanoro shata mevi olenu ba'alila ata mevia. So on the one hand, it's Noros. Noros means amazing, awe-inspiring things that God has in mind for us. On the other hand, it's called Alila. Alila means an excuse, meaning if there's sin, then as a result of sin, this is going to happen. But at the same time, we're calling it Noros. This is the amazing, divine plan. Bora'e. So Rabos, I'm going to ask you a question, but if you don't look, if you cover the words on the top left here. Was the original divine plan that man would be immortal or mortal? What?
Immortal,
right?
Yeah.
Excuse me, I have something caught in my throat, but it'll hopefully will straighten itself out. However, I'll prove to you that's not so. How? Because the Torah was given thousands of years before man was created. And death is part of the Torah. So what happens over here? God says, "Biyom acholcha mimenu, on the day that you eat from the Eitz Hadas, mos tamus." That's going to bring mortality. I have this, so Reuven, I don't know how much water I can drink. But thank you for the... So God's going to bring mortality into the world as a punishment to man. Correct? So what's going on over here? In fact, the Medrash claims that when it says Choshech al Pnei Tahom, which is a description of the world as at the time of its creation, that is an allusion to the Malach HaMoves. HaMachshech Pneim Shel Brios. So the darkness of the world is the Malach HaMoves. Wait a second. Anam HaRishon wasn't even created yet. He was created as an immortal being in the original plan. God says to him, "I warn you, when you eat from the Eitz Hadas, you're going to bring death into the world." Well, God created the Malach HaMoves even before man was created. So the Medrash goes on and says, "Moshel amad dover tov, lemisha mevakish legarish es ishto." A man has already made the decision that he's gonna divorce his wife because he thinks that she did something immoral, whatever it is. So what does he do? Bikesh lechel, when he's about to go home, he has a get written. Okay, so the get is ready. Nichnas lebeso, he's got the get in his back pocket. Umevakesh alila, he looks for some sin on her behalf, litnala, an excuse to give it to her. Onala. So he says to Mizgi Likos, "Pour me a cup that I should drink." So she pours him a cup of lukewarm tea. I'm just saying that because I hate lukewarm tea. But anyway, I'm a litvak in that sense, right? I need hot tea. So she pours him lukewarm tea. So came in Shinotal Kos Miyod Omale Arezegitech, he pulls out the get. And why? Because my pishi, what was your terrible affair? You didn't give me a hot glass of tea like I asked you to. Tse'imi besi. Shemazakta li kos pashur. Pashur means lukewarm. Amrala. So she responds and she says, "Wait a minute. Kfarayisi odeh shani asida limzog l'cha kos pashur. You knew it. Kasavta get, you had the get in your back pocket, and you pulled it out. You didn't write the get after I gave you a close up shot. So who are you fooling over here? So again, what we have here is a situation where there's a plan, for whatever reason, and you're going to look for an excuse, which is called an alila, as if to say, because of this excuse, the plan is going to materialize. But the plan predated that serious or not so serious violation by who knows what. So who are you fooling here? Afkach, Omar HaKadosh, Omar Adam Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, Ad Shelo Baras Olamecha, 2,000 years before you created the world. And I think, Murray, you asked me why 2,000. I don't know. Yes. I can't find an answer to this question. Anyway,
I ask you how the concept of time...
2,000. What's
the
2,000?
How the concept of time itself existed.
Oh, okay. I thought you were asking about the number 2,000. Anyway, Haysed Torah Etzlecha, Amun. Amun means it was locked up in a safe. You already had the Torah prepared for 2,000 years before creation. Shekach Ksiv Ve'yeh Etzlo Amun Ve'yeh Pasuk Mishlei. V'ayeshashuim yom yom, and what's yom yom? Every yom is 1,000 years in the eyes of God. El Shar Beinecha Yom Esva. Again, I'm not going through all these drushes. Uksiv, and what does it say in your Torah? This is what Adam Arishan is asking the Ribbono Shalom. What does it say in the Torah that predated the universe by 2,000 years? It says Adam ki yomus ba'olel. It means ilulei shetkanta maves lebrios. If not that you establish a world with death. Hayisa kosi bakach? Would you write that man is going to die in the oil? Ella says Anurishon boss litlos bias halila. Kaviyochli says to God, you're looking for an excuse. But Nora alila al bnei adam. Nora means it was part of the great awesome plan of God that man should die. So again, there's a tremendous complicated paradox here, because on the one hand, it was part of the divine plan for the great greatness of man that man should die. Somehow death is a good thing in the divine plan. But yet, God looks for an excuse, so to speak, to pin it on man's sin. So you're going to die because you ate from the Eitz Hadas. So therefore, says the Efei Tohar, the same thing happens in the case of the Midbar. God had the original plan, which is no rose, that we, the Jewish people, would have to go through the desert drinking the Me'be'er and eating the man, studying the Torah for 40 years. The Parsha says that the 40 years was a punishment for the sin of the Meraglim. That's again, Nora Alila. Nora means it was part of the great divine plan, but Alila B'nei Adam, there has to be an excuse somehow because man sins. So the balance of this essay is to try to understand this phenomenon that seems to repeat itself time after time called Nora Alila. God had a plan, let's say in the case of death. It was already written in the Torah way before man sinned, but yet God waits until man sins to bring about death. Or Yosef has to go down to Mitzrayim, and all of the people of the house of Jacob has to go there, but we wait for the Alila, meaning because they sold him as a slave. Or, in the case of a man in the Mashal, who's already prepared to get for whatever reason, and now he looks for an excuse, but the get was already prepared. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a world with death built in. That was part of the divine original plan before man sinned, but we look for the Alila. And the same thing happens here in the fact that it was part of the divine plan that the people should go through the Midbar for 40 years for the reason that we described, but we need an Alila, and the Alila is going to be the Chet of the miracle. So what's it all about? So we have now 9 minutes. I don't know, because I worked very hard on this, if I can convince myself and you that I have an answer to this question, but let's try to see what the Ribbono Shel Olam allow us to do in 9 minutes. He says, Yifla afla v'fel. I don't understand him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu rotzo lavi misa la'adam. If that was the divine desire that man should have death, and that's what was embedded in his Torah, why does he need an alila? Mi yomer lo matasa. Who's going to tell him, well, don't bring death into the world, and we have to wait till man sins? And furthermore, when God warns man, mi eitz hadas, if you eat for the eitz hadas, most tumas, It's really not that you're going to die because you ate from the Eitz Hadas. That's not really accurate. It was part of the original Noros and the divine plan that man would die. So what does God mean when he warns man that if he chooses with his freedom of choice to eat from the Eitz Hadas, he will die? We're on page 4. Now, if God knew that man would sin, and therefore God already built in death into his created world, then it really turns out that man doesn't have freedom of choice, because man is going to have to choose to eat from the Eitz Hadas, because otherwise the divine plan won't come to fulfillment. And the same question we could raise on the Ifei Toar with regard to the Chet of the Meraglim. You know, where's the freedom of choice for the Meraglim if you're telling me that it was part of the divine plan in any event that they'd have to go through the Midbar? So did they have a freedom of choice that they could have not sinned? Eich Yalal Adasi says Shalom Hoysol Amaraglim Bechira V'im Hoyu Bochrim Shalom Ledaber Sarah Leretz Yisrael Lo Hoya Kodesh Baruch Hu Ma'akiv Yisrael Arboim Shonah Bamidbar. So in order to introduce his answer, he quotes a pasuk in Dvarim, and this is called Kasher Yisar Ishes Bino Hashem El Kecha Miyasreka. In other words, punishment, we have to understand, is for the benefit is for the benefit of man. We should never mistakenly understand that punishment is because of God's anger or God wants to avenge, you know, the sins of man. No, it's like a father who punishes his son. He does it out of love for the benefit of his son in order to educate him and guide him. That's number one. When God creates man, already in the divine understanding, man would have to die. Why is that so? So we're now in a paragraph that starts Lefi Zeh on the bottom, towards the bottom right. Man is going to face the Yetzer Hara. That's the purpose of creation, that man has to overcome all temptation. The only way in the divine understanding that man could overcome temptation is if he realizes that there's going to be a day of reckoning, that he's going to eventually die. If man has no fear of death and he's going to live eternally, then the Yetzer Hara is always going to be able to trick him and catch him in his net. Why? Because, you know what? Be laid back about it. You have no punishment of death, you know, that there's no albatross around your neck. Don't be afraid that something is being held over your head. You have guaranteed immortality. This is what the Gemara says, Maskirin lo yom ha-misa. The Gemara says that if the Yetzer Hara gets the best of you, you have to remind yourself of the day of your death. So it means that even before the chait of Adam HaRishon, God already knew that man has to die. And now we're in the middle column. However, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have immediately, with the creation of man, decreed that man would die, man would have no appreciation, no understanding as to why God brought death into the world. He would not understand that death is meant to be a deterrent from sin. Hello, l'chora tov yoser. Man naively thinks that it wouldn't have been in his favor, in his benefit, if he would live eternally, and he would serve God for all eternity. Man doesn't appreciate the fact that death is a good thing for him in his battle against the Yetzer Hara. Lachem, therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides that I'm going to find a way of explaining to man why is it that death is good for him. And I'm going to tell him that death is going to be a punishment for a crime, so that you will now live in a world of mortality, and you will appreciate the fact that you will suffer death, and you will bring upon and hasten your death if you sin. So by telling man that his sins will bring about death, God is now accomplishing his goal in bringing death into the world. Again, what was God's original plan? That death would serve as a powerful force to deter man from sin. He would always remember that it's not just a free-for-all because I'm going to live forever, but there will be a day of reckoning. I will suffer death. And that's going to be the powerful deterrent, that the fear. But man doesn't understand that. He doesn't appreciate that. He thinks in the best interest of man, it would be for man to exist for all immortality. So therefore, God has to find a way of educating man to appreciate death. Death was part of the divine plan for man, but man would not appreciate that unless man would be faced with a challenge, and the nature of that challenge, the warning, the scary part of it, would be that if he fails in that challenge, he would die. So that death means punishment for a crime. And punishment for a crime is the greatest deterrent that there is. I mean, even in law today, I mean, why do we punish criminals? Again, there are many answers to that question, but one answer would be as a deterrent for crime. Nimtza lefizeh, she'achrei shechata v'nofel bereshes hanachash hakadmoni, and after he sins, man realizes and appreciates that HaKadosh Baruch Hu decrees death upon him. For what purpose? In order to give him a deterrent and enable him to overcome the powerful influences, the luring of the Yetzara, because he always will remember the Yom HaMisa, the punishment that hovers over his head. And if this be the case, we begin to understand Nora Alila. What is Nora Alila? Nora means how great is God's plan. And yet God needs the Alila, and he has to challenge man with the great challenge of the Eitz Hadas, giving man freedom, in order for man to eventually appreciate that his deterrent will be Misa. And that's the mashal of the man who has a get prepared for his wife. In truth, there was every reason to give that get for his wife. She had been unfaithful. But nevertheless, he didn't want to embarrass her, so he found some sort of an excuse to divorce her. Now let's get back to the Chet HaMeraglim. We have 3 minutes. We'll see if we can do this. He says the following. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in his divine plan, knew that Bnei Yisrael, for their benefit, would have to go through the Midbar for 40 years and benefit from that, spiritually inspiring them, etc. But he needed Nora Alila. Why did he need the Alila? Why did he need that man would sin with the Chet HaMeraglim? Because Kedei Shelo Yavo Yisrael B'Tayna LaKadosh Baruch Hu, the people would not appreciate spending 40 years trekking through the Midbar. They had already suffered 2 centuries plus of exile in Mitzrayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to prove to them that they are not ready to enter into the land, and they need that 40 years in the Midbar. And otherwise they're not going to appreciate the 40 years. They see it as a punishment. So now, what we're going to do is, we're going to prove that, in fact, they're not ready for Eretz Yisrael. They need those 40 years to prepare themselves, to insulate them. They're on a low spiritual level. Even the greatest leaders have fallen prey to the Yetzer Hara. And the truth is, had they been Omed Ben Yisrael, and I think this is the point that you gentlemen were making before, both Larry and also Murray, he says that had they utilized their freedom of choice to overcome the temptation, and they brought back a good tiding about Eretz Yisrael, then it would have been spiritually one day connected 1 year. So instead of needing 40 years in the desert, they would have accomplished it in 40 days. Because as we said before, the whole theory here is based on a qualitative equation between 1 day and 1 year. So even though the Meraglim Mitzad Atzma were tzaddikim, but nevertheless they fell prey to the Yetzer Hara, and instead of having 1 day representing a full year in the Midbar, they would have to go through the Midbar and experience the Midbar for 40 years. So what's the Nora Alila here? What's the Mida Keneged Mida? Is that the people of Israel will appreciate that they're on such a level, they're not ready for entering into Eretz. So they need to remain in the Midbar for 40 years to purify themselves through the Achilas Haman and the Shtiyas Me'aber. And then after they have immunized themselves, they're ready to enter into the land, and together with their farming and all the dedication to work, they can be Osek B'Torah and still be uplifted. That's called Nora Alim. Okay, then I think it's time for Mincha, for Ma'ariv. I mean, we did the best we could in the time that we had.